we have the pleasure of speaking with the two co-founders of Coursera, and Andrew Ng and Daphne Koller. Really very excited to talk to them today. Going to run through a few questions, let them tell us a little bit about their initiatives, what they're excited about, and what they hope to do with really a considerable round of funding as they really get this initiative off the ground. So welcome, and enjoy the conversation we have with them. Glad to have you here on Review Ed and joining us. And also, ultimately, this will be reposted on ZDNet. This is of a pretty wide interest. So, guys, can you do me a favor and just give a really quick intro of yourselves and sort of how you came to where you are now? Just a 30-second personal elevator pitch.
Go ahead, Andrew.
Sure. So Daphne and I have been working in online education for the last 3-4 years, and this sort of culminated last year in 3 Stanford online course offerings, each of which had an enrollment of 100,000 or so students and up. And building on the success of that, we realized that a good way forward would be if we were to take the online education technology we've developed and partner with the best professors and the best universities in the world to try to help them offer their amazing courses, not just to hundreds of students, but to tens or hundreds of thousands of students. And that's how we ended up founding Coursera and doing what we do today.
Outstanding. So how, obviously you've just received a pretty good chunk of funding to kind of move this forward. How do you anticipate this will allow you to grow, and where do you sort of see yourself in the next year or so?
Our current company is quite small. We have 12 people, but we're looking to grow to about 25 by year end. The large majority of that will be engineers who will be working on building up the platform to provide a really amazing experience for the students who take our courses and for the instructors who offer their courses on our platform. The other large population of people that we are looking to hire are what we call course operations people. And they are the ones who are working instructor-facing to help develop the pedagogy for online teaching, which is a fairly immature technology at this point, and so there's a lot of questions that need to be answered in terms of what's the best way to take different kinds of course content and offer them online in an effective way. And there's, dozens of decisions that range from exactly how the video should be presented and edited, what kinds of assessments one can offer for different kinds of courses, and so on. And so this balance between engineers and course operations really reflects the dual mission of this company, which is to develop simultaneously the technology of online teaching as well as the pedagogy of online teaching.
Excellent.
And why do you both, Andrew or Daphne, why do you decided to go on this adventure in 2012? So, we see, or we are seeing a little bit of what we could call an exodus from professors of some of the prestigious universities. And I mean, your colleague Sebastian Truhn out of Stanford just recently with Udacity as well. So was it a sort of technical decision, as you pointed out, Daphne, that there are still a lot of questions open from the technology, how should the videos be, and as well as from the teaching point of view? Was it that financing is for such a startup idea is much easier in 2012? So basically, why do you say now was the right point to start Coursera?
So I should say that Daphne and I are still Stanford. I should say Daphne and I are still Stanford professors. We're both on partial leave from the university. Mm-hmm. As why we chose this time to do this. We ended up, it was a couple of things. I think one is that the technology is finally good enough. We've been working in this space for several years, and only recently technology was created to large part by us to scale up online education to tens or hundreds of thousands of students. And the second reason why this is a good time is I think this is the Facebook generation. I think students today grew up having web browsers for most or all of their lives and are much used to sending each other text messages and getting their content consumed online. And I think there's a combination of these factors that makes this the right timing to do this. I should say, in the way that we've been developing the company, we kind of have one rule, which is that whenever there's a decision to be made, we figure out what's best for the students, and we do that. And so the evolution of our thinking was that this was a Stanford-only project last year, and when we asked ourselves what's best for the students, is it best to keep it as a Stanford-only project and just offer Stanford courses, or to give students access to a range of courses from the top universities? The answer to that was just incredibly obvious, and that's why we decided to take this outside Stanford and partner with the best universities, the best professors, to put their courses online.
Mm-hmm. And I think you currently partnered with three other universities. Is that right? University of Michigan, Pennsylvania, and help me with the third one besides Stanford.
Recently, Princeton University, Stanford, University of Michigan, and University of Pennsylvania announced partnerships with us. And so their faculty are, or have been, or will be putting their courses on the Coursera platform.
And we have several others in the pipeline.
Mm-hmm. And is it so, Andrew, I saw your course on machine learning. I suppose similar to the one you taught at Stanford last year or term. Is it currently going on? As I saw it on your website, is basically mentioned next session April 23rd. So where some of the other courses are scheduled for later this year, July, some of them I think also November. How many things are currently going on, and when do you think you will launch full time, maybe?
So we have a broad range of courses launching at various times over the next few months, now through maybe late summer and beyond. And so my machine learning class is just starting. Students can still sign up, and as well as a number of other computer science classes. And in the next month, I think we have a class on vaccines, a class on affordable healthcare. Oh, sorry, those start in June. And then throughout summer, we have other classes on poetry, Greek and Roman mythology, various medical school classes, finance classes, class on intro to sociology. Ton of courses will be launching in the next few months.
I think one of the unique aspects of our offering is the fact that our technology was designed to accommodate not just engineering courses or math courses where you can do assessments where there is a single right answer so that one could use technology such as multiple choice or numerical grading, but also to accommodate using techniques such as peer grading, a much more open-ended form of assignment. And that was a big focus for us in developing the platform so that we could accommodate a broad range of disciplines. And the interesting thing was that as soon as we had this capability in the pipeline, it was pretty clear that all the engineering faculty also wanted this capability for their courses as well.
So I guess that brings up an interesting question. You mentioned it before, this idea of, this is really, there's pedagogies here that are emerging, and there's a lot of people who are, they want to get into this, but there's much to be learned. So what do you see as, the top two or three questions that do need to be answered about how best to teach and learn online?
I think one of the big questions that needs to be answered is how to build in, for example, community into the learning experience, because one of the things that this is missing, obviously, is the ability to interact in meaningful ways with an instructor or the teaching staff, because there's one instructor for 20 or 50 or 100,000 students, and obviously you don't get the one-on-one attention that you might get in a classroom. And so the question is, how do you build on ideas like social networks, which are so important in today's society, to improve the quality of the learning experience in these online platforms?
That makes a lot of sense. Go ahead, Andrew.
Oh boy, that was my number one answer as well. I should say one other aspect of technology we've been developing is actually the instructor-facing technology. I guess this is a bit of technology, a bit of pedagogy, but I think professors are used to teach, walk into a classroom and teaching in a certain way. And when you take a class that has traditionally been delivered to a live classroom and put it in online format, it allows you to do different things, some better, some worse as well. So for example, we're finding that in the online media, many students prefer a much faster pacing. In a normal classroom, you know, professors like me, I blab. I just make up time and slow down the lecture to make sure that everyone has time, the lecture's not too fast and the people are following along, because we know that if we lose a student halfway through a lecture, they may remain lost for the rest of the lecture. But in an online medium, what we found is that many students prefer a much faster pacing, because if you miss something, then you can just, instead of having to raise your hand and ask the professor to repeat what he or she said, which no student seems to like to do, you can just do an instant replay, and that works much better. So this allows us to make much more efficient use of the student's time as well.
Do you have metrics on that? I'm sorry to interrupt. Go ahead, Daphne.
I just want to add one more to the list. I mean, if you're following up on Andrew's, then, but I have one more to the list beyond that.
No, go ahead. I can circle back.
Okay. So I think the other really big one, which I think at this point we certainly haven't even started to scratch the surface of, is the whole idea of using the large amount of data that we're getting on student learning and student behaviors in the context of a learning environment to get much deeper insights about how students learn. Because at this point we have the capability of recording for a given student every click, when they rewind to watch the previous segment, and what does that imply, or how is that correlated with their performance on quiz questions or other assessments down the line. And that data has enormous potential. It has enormous potential for understanding how students learn and what are effective teaching strategies, for example. But it also has the potential of using machine learning techniques, and both Andrew and I, our core research is actually in machine learning, to come up with a much more personalized student experience that guides students towards strategies, towards trajectories that are most that are likely to be most effective for them as learners. And I think the potential on that is huge, because currently our teaching paradigm is certainly in an in-class setting, but even currently in our own system, is still mostly a one-size-fits-all strategy. In the online setting, as Andrew said, there is a bit more flexibility because people can go at their own pace, and they can rewind, and they can maybe go back to see some material that they didn't get the first time. But really, I think this is only the beginning of a personalized learning experience.
Well, I'm glad I waited, because that was exactly my question. Is, you know, what are you guys looking at in terms of metrics and data, and how you know, how is that helping to drive instruction? So that was a perfect answer to a question I didn't ask yet. So thank you very much.
Well, I think this, there's a lot of tremendous potential there, and I don't think any of us have even a clue of how big this is going to be.
Right. Right.
Yeah, so talking about the visionary side of the project then, obviously, besides taking learning out of a context of, I suppose you have at Stanford probably classes of maybe 200, and then, as Andrew and you definitely pointed out, having now the potential of teaching hundreds of thousands of students in just one class. What is your vision? So basically the impact Coursera and other approaches similar to what you do will have on society, and also what it means for work life when we now, let's say, they maybe not get or not yet have the chance to get the same degree, MBA or what so, but they can prove that they successfully made this course. And what do you think the implication and the impact could potentially be?
So I think you're absolutely right, Kristen. We want to give anyone in the world with an internet connection a high-quality education for free. I think today places like Princeton, Stanford, Michigan, Penn have given amazing education, but to a minuscule fraction of the population. And I'd love to see a future where these universities are educating not just thousands of people, but millions of people. As an instructor, one of the most gratifying things has been actually hearing from students the stories about the things that they've been able to do as a result of taking these classes. So I've had students that were, you know, about to be laid off, but because they had taken the machine learning class, they were able to take the newfound knowledge and preserve their job or have a job change to use, in the case of my students, to use machine learning in their company differently. Had many students tell me that they're proudly listing the classes in their resume and also using these courses to get a better job. So I think because of the diversity of the Coursera course offerings, ranging from humanities to business, finance to engineering, I think that almost anyone in any walk of life, I hope, will be able to find something online and learn something new. I think today, if you want to learn something new, you know, what are your options? Well, you could sit at home and watch videos on PBS or on YouTube EDU or watch videos on iTunes U, but that's a somewhat lonely experience and maybe also not the best way to learn something. But with an online class and taught not by some random person, but with an online class taught by some of the best professors in the world, you can join a community of thousands of people and learn something new, either to strengthen your resume and get a better job, or just to expand your knowledge and learn something fun and interesting.
And do you think there's also then the risk, sorry, Daphne, I just let you continue in a second, that there's also a certain risk involved when now, hundreds of thousands of people can prove the same in their resume, that there is an increased competition for attractive jobs?
I think education is the great, great equalizer. And here in America, we have so many American dream success stories. Mm-hmm. I think if we can increase the degree to which everyone in the U.S. or everyone on the planet has knowledge, then that just creates more wealth for everyone.
How do you see this being able to be taken forward in a more formal kind of way? Because there are plenty of employers who would be happy to see people just going out and building skills, but there's still a lot who are sort of entrenched in, you know, 1995 and want to see a degree. Do you see badging being an important part of this or an actual sort of method of granting a degree or certificate ultimately coming out of this?
Well, so we know that there is a significant move in the community in general towards less official forms of certification, a full college degree. This is certainly the case for people who already have a college degree and are just trying to continue their education. This is a fairly large fraction of the population who, for example, took our fall quarter classes, such as Andrew's machine learning class or the database class. But I think even for other populations, less official forms of certification are starting to carry more credence. See, for example, the Mozilla Open Badges project. Now, I do think that individual courses are something that is very worthwhile, but ultimately you're going to want larger units that where a person has developed a set of skills by taking a range of courses in a particular area, and that might carry more value than as a whole than in terms of the individual parts. And I think this is very much an ecosystem that is just in the very earliest phases, and we don't yet have an idea of exactly how these individual units of certification of some kind or another will be aggregated to provide meaningful value to people. But we see that they're already providing meaningful value even as they are.
Excellent. Just one final question for both of you from me, and I don't know if Kirsten may want to jump in as well, but for both of you, what are you the most excited about in the next 6 months?
So Chris, to me personally, the thing that's most exciting is the prospect of changing millions of students' lives. Throughout, up and down the company, we have this rule of putting the student first. And I think so long as we keep on doing that, we'll manage to make the right decisions and steer the right path as a company.
If only it were that way across education, that's a great statement. Daphne, how about you?
Well, I mean, I clearly agree with Andrew. I think that the reason why we each went into this, why we both went into this, was the opportunity to change people's lives around the world. I mean, when you think about some of the crises that we're currently tackling in education, in the United States, it's actually quite surprising, because if you look at a 12-year period, people talk about the rising costs of healthcare, and indeed those have gone up by 250%. During that same period, the costs of higher education have gone up by 450%. And so it's becoming out of reach for a large number of people who could greatly benefit from having access to high-quality education. At the same time, when you look across the world, especially developing countries, it's not even about affordability. It's about the availability and access to this education to begin with. I mean, there just are not enough slots in institutions of higher education for the number of people who really deserve and want a high-quality education. And so I think that by opening up the kind of curriculum that top academic institutions around the world can offer to currently a tiny sliver of the population, making that available for free to so many people, I think this can just open doors for people around the world to make a much better life for themselves, for their families, and for the communities, as well as just open their minds to new ideas.
Well said. Thank you.
So, Daphne, as you mentioned, cost in higher education, and I mean, it's great when you come on the website and you immediately see that all those exciting courses on Coursera are taught for free to the world by some of the world's best lecturers. But on the other hand, well, you are venture-backed, and somewhat one might say, as soon as you are in one boat with VCs, you are also, or you should be, on the road for an exit. So how do you maintain this balance of offering Coursera for free and, on the other hand, having 16 million from a venture capital company or companies?
So one of the things that we were very thoughtful and mindful of when we selected to work with these particular VCs is that they both have a tremendous passion for the mission of the company in terms of offering a high-quality education for free. So I think although both of them would like to see the company be successful, I think they are equally value the fact that we are able to offer this educational mission to the world. And that was part of our thinking when we chose to work with these VCs, as opposed to many others who had approached us and offered us funding. Now, I believe that the ethos currently in Silicon Valley is that if you construct a website where people go and they keep coming back and they bring their friends to join them, then eventually there will be a way of bringing in revenue to sustain the effort. And when you change that many people's lives, then you will be able to find a way to make it financially stable. And so we believe that $16 million gives us enough breathing space to construct a monetization strategy that will make this self-sustaining, and that's what we hope to do.
Yeah, I think hearing that you'll certainly have time to, or a little bit of time to figure this out and how to make money, but I'm sure that you will find one or the other way to do so. Yeah, so I don't know, Chris, do you have more questions, or should we wrap this up?
Absolutely. We should probably wrap it up. I'm sure they have more calls waiting. But really, thank you very, very much for your time today. Congratulations. And I think this is, this is truly an outstanding effort. And very, very glad to have you on with us today.
Yeah, thanks so much for talking with us.
Thanks, Chris.
Thanks, Dr. Chris. Thanks, Kristen.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll talk to you soon.
Bye.
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 Oh, that was a great conversation. Really enjoyed having them on, and I have to say I really admire their vision and what they hope to bring to education with all of this. This is actually, you know, I think way beyond what a lot of us have been looking at in this space. So it was a pleasure having them on, and I hope to be hearing lots more from them as the months and years progress.